You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross. I'm joined in the studio by Kate Lochte and Murray State's Cinema International Coordinator and English and Philosophy faculty member, Tim Johns. Tim, thanks for being back on Sounds Good.
Thank you.
Tracy, I have to say that I had never heard of Elin Jewell before you started playing her music on Sounds Good, and I really like it, and I thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
You know, Murray, Kentucky, has received the designation of the friendliest town on earth and a retirement mecca. And one of the reasons I'd like to go for the retirement mecca thing is the presence of a university in a small, congenial town. And one of the assets of the presence of a university is offerings for the community, like Cinema International, that you're part of the team putting it together. So it looks like just an excellent season, and the showings are at the Kura Center Theater Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 7:30. They're free for everyone, students, faculty, and everyone else. All the community is welcome. So this season, Tim, you have two one-night stands that are particularly interesting.
Yeah, we have two one-night events this semester. The first is going to be on February 21st, when, in conjunction with the Black History Month Celebration Committee, we're going to screen 12 Years a Slave, Stephen McQueen's new film. And the second event is co-sponsored by the Consulate General of Nashville. And it's a story about a woman named Taylor Anderson who died during the Fukushima tsunami. So that both of these events sound very interesting.
In fact, you are among the fortunate who've already seen 12 Years a Slave. And it is something really to pay attention to, since it's obviously a commercial success as well as an art house theater success. You saw it at Maiden Alley, did you say?
No, I saw it at Paducah Cinemark with a very small crowd in attendance.
Wow.
I think a lot of people are a little afraid to see the film because everyone knows that the brutality of slavery is very much evident in the film. Two things I would sort of say about encouraging people to see it. Firstly, it's by Steve McQueen, who's actually a visual artist. I saw a show of his at the Chicago Art Institute of Chicago last year. So it's very kind of interesting in terms of how he looks at the bayou and the South and the way that it's filmed. And the second thing is, I think it really sort of alerts us to how slavery operated. Many of the films about slavery have had sort of sentimental overtones. I'm thinking of, Spielberg's Amistad or something like this. But this really shows you the extent to which slaves were kind of understood as commodities within 19th century capitalism. So, the sort of portrait of the economy of slavery, I think, is really, really, eye-opening for me, and I think it would be for other audiences as well.
I read in some of the run-ups for the Academy Awards, there's been a lot of press about this particular movie, and I read that the sense of the loss of ownership of space, the protagonist and the slave master are always very, very close, too close.
Yeah, there is a kind of incestuous kind of overlapping between the worlds of the slave owner and the slave quarters. They invite the slaves in to dance in these very sort of uncomfortable, moments. I think what the movie does a really good job about, too, is really conveying the power of the written word and how important that was for, the African Americans of the 19th century and sort of antebellum America, and just how important it was for them to find a way to write, because the main, character in the book is always trying to find an implement to write with, just to express himself, and how, a sense of self comes out of about writing of the self. If you know the great slave narratives of the 19th century, it really conveys that very well.
Now, moving on to the Live Your Dream documentary about the student at Fukushima, you said you were in the same program, the JET program. Tell us about that.
The JET program is run by the Japanese government, and basically they hire people from around the world, from Australia, from England, from the United States, from New Zealand, to teach and often team teach with English teachers in Japan. So it's both pedagogical and it's cultural. I mean, in a strange way, Japan, even though it's one of the, you know, economic powerhouses in the world, it's still sort of somewhat culturally homogeneous. So part of the reason they've brought you know, these teachers in is because they want to sort of integrate Japan culturally. And so this was a young American woman who from very early on in her life was interested in Japanese culture. I haven't yet seen the film, but she went to was unfortunate enough to have been in Fukushima during the tsunami, and you know, just devastating. But apparently it's a very uplifting film as well, just describing her life and her interest in Japan. So
those two headliners are headliners because they are one-night shows.
Right.
But the rest are three-night shows, mm-hmm. and among them, let's jump to February 6th through the 8th, Marley. I should imagine, if nothing else, the movie will be wonderful to listen to.
Yeah, and by the way, the Kura Center Theater, if you haven't been there, we have a wonderful sound system. So just for the music, you should go there, you know, to listen to Bob Marley's songs. But what's really interesting about the film, and I was one of the ones who was really wanted to select this film from our committee, is because it really gets into the sort of background of Jamaican politics and really the kind of ways in which Marley and Rastafarianism had a kind of transatlantic power. One of the scenes in the film is very interesting. It's when Robert Mugabe is ascending to his presidency in the 1980s in Zimbabwe. And so Marley is asked to play a show there. And Prince Charles is in attendance. It's a very, very strange thing. But you realize the sort of magnetism of Marley as a sort of international, not just musical figure, but as a sort of cultural icon throughout the, you know, the sort of transatlantic world.
And another one that you're particularly keen on is this film out of China just last year titled A Touch of Sin.
Yeah, if the film sounds like it's going to be sort of risque, it's not. It's actually politically risque. The director is Zha Zhengke, and he's made a number of very, very interesting films in the last 15 years or so, many of which have not been able to screen in China because of censorship. He's made one about the Yangtze Dam project, a fictional account of this. But this, I haven't seen it yet, but it's just been wildly well received, and it's four interrelated stories that really apparently put, you know, the finger on sort of what are the problems in China now during their what many call the sort of neoliberal experiment of their economy, which has created great differences between the haves and have-nots in China.
Now, I'm going to ask you to speak to the spirit of the beehive.
Okay, this is a classic. This is our one sort of repertoire film, our sort of classic film. It was made in the 70s, 1973, and under the Franco dictatorship in Spain. And it's probably the most famous film to have emerged from the Franco dictatorship. And in order to emerge from the Franco dictatorship,
you had to live through it.
Well, no, it has to be. The film is veiled in all of these kind of metaphorical allusions. So you have to kind of peel back the layers of sort of representation and symbolism to really understand how the director is trying to get at, you know, the kind of, you know, the social conditions of living under of Franco. So it's a very enigmatic film. It's a very strange film. But as you see in our poster, the late Robert Ebert calls it, this is one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen.
We jump next to late February, and we're talking about a 2011 film coming out of Palestine, Israel, France, and the Netherlands titled Five Broken Cameras, and you're especially passionate about this one.
Yeah, I've seen the film in Los Angeles. I saw the film in Los Angeles last year, and it's about a guy who's basically making movies in a Palestinian guy who's making movies in a Palestinian village. I think in the West Bank, and he has 5 broken cameras because he's continually being shot at by Israeli settlers and members of the IDF, Israeli Defense Forces. So the strange thing about it, actually, I mean, aside from just being a searing portrait of oppression in the West Bank, is it's actually a very beautiful film. The directors, it's actually an Israeli activist and the Palestinian filmmaker, who the guy with the cameras who put it together. And so the editing of it, of showing the sort of evolution of, the sort of what's happening is in his village and the sort of usurpation of the land and water by the settlers, is actually portrayed very beautifully. There's also, it's also, just maddeningly, sort of sad in terms of the way in which the guy's friends are killed and the ways in which he's sort of, arrested and his young son doesn't know what's happening. So, if you're interested in the Middle East and, American foreign policy, that would be really something I would circle to see.
So, once again, we're speaking with English faculty member Tim Johns about Cinema International, and it's a program that lasts throughout the academic semester, takes a couple of weeks off for spring break. But the purpose for it, these shows are Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, 7:30 at the Kerr Center Theater. Admission is free, and I think you could kind of gather from what you've talked about, Tim, is the fabulous sense of place that you get when you see a foreign film, sense of culture. And it's, not only is it entertaining, but there are vestigial effects.
Yeah. Seeing things on the big screen just make such a difference. We screened the Darden brothers' Kid with a Bike last weekend, and there's one sequence that's really reminiscent of François Truffaut's 400 Blows and of this kid sort of biking through this sort of street area in Belgium. And, just to see that on the screen, on the big screen, I agree, you do learn about international culture, but you also sort of realize the extent to which globalization has made us all sort of, has interrelated cultures around the world.
So this week, to top it off, is what is affectionately called a kimchi Western.
This was introduced to us by a member of our committee. And last semester, we did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So this is, Korean cinema, if you don't follow Korean cinema, is always doing very, very weird things. So I think the weird part of the title will really play into this. It's a sort of action film. It takes place in Japanese-occupied Korea. So it should be really wild and entertaining.
That's this week, this mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. and Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Did we mention 7:30 p.m., Kerr Center Theater, free? Is there popcorn?
Yes, there's popcorn. We have a popcorn stand, and we have popcorn, and we have refreshments as well. So please come.
Tim Johns, thanks for being with us today on Sounds Good.